the ABC's Word Wizard, the Lord of Language. A word in your ear with Professor Raleigh Sussex.
Good morning to you, Raleigh, and a very apt topic today, election words, because we haven't had enough election stuff, but this will be fun, I think.
We haven't had enough elections, so this is going to deluge us for 5 weeks or so, and I thought we'd better celebrate the vocabulary of.
I didn't realise that so many connections, but when I saw some of the lists, and it really does have.
It's huge. And some of the words we only use when elections come round, like prorogue. Now, you prorogue Parliament. Now, this is not the same as dismissing it or dissolving it. James II, I think, dissolved Parliament, which basically he said, we're going to shut this thing down. It's not going to be a nuisance anymore. He dissolved it. Proroguing means that it actually means to continue.
Okay.
And it's a kind of, almost a contradiction in terms, because when you prorogue Parliament, you say, it now ceases, we're going to have an election, there will be another parliament after the election. But the word prorogue is only used with parliaments, and it's only used when the Prime Minister goes to see the Governor-General to organise the date. Mm-hmm. And all of this goes back to the All Thing. And the All Thing was the oldest continuous parliament in the world, and it was in Iceland.
All right.
It's more than 1,000 years old. And All Thing meant everybody's assembly. Thing meant assembly in those days. And with one short gap during one of the wars, it's the oldest continuous democratic body. The Greeks invented democracy.
Yep.
But they had lots of interruptions and military things in between. But the oldest one is Iceland. It's very interesting.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. Let's get to our first caller this morning, Rolly. And this is actually a topic about something that was said last week. Hazel from Bribie, good morning.
Good morning, Rolly. How are you?
Flourishing, thank you.
Right. Well, you were talking about amount of people last week, and I always hear it, and it gives me the creeps. And one of the ways that I help, I always say to people, if you're talking about an amount of people, you've got the wrong word, because if you use the word amount, you can imagine what I see when I go to the nearest big shopping centre where there's a food hall, and I see the amount of people with bulging backsides coming over the edge of the seats. The amount of people who love stuffing their faces.
Right, you're talking about the volume of the individuals.
Yes.
Okay, exactly. Right. Okay. That might be a special way of referring to it for you. We're actually meant to say number of people, of course. But
Yes. But if you imagine these big blobs of people.
Possibly, yes.
Think, well, amount of people, no, that's not right. I shouldn't use that word.
No, we shouldn't. Well, I mean, if you go to the Gabba and come out of a game after the Lions, particularly after the Lions have won, there's a great amount of people all over the street, but they're actually a number. Thank you for that thought.
Yeah, okay. Bye. Anyway, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. So that number again, if you'd like to have a chat to Rolly, ask a question, 1-300-222-612 is the talkback number, or you can send a text, 0467-922-612. 1-300-222-612 for talkback. Pork barrel's an interesting one. What's the origins of that one when it comes
American
to?
American, mainly. People used to stand on a pork barrel to get it. It's a bit like standing on the stump, and that's another Americanism, to get a bit of elevation so that you can address the crowd. But after that, they would open up the pork barrel and start giving bits of meat out to the populace as a means of bribing. I'll give you, if I give you this, then surely you're going to vote for me, won't you? Won't you? Right.
Gotcha.
And so pork barreling is when the parties get seriously down to enticing the electorate with promises. If you vote for us, we will give you this benefit and that benefit and so on.
Yeah.
And it's all part of democracy, which is Greek, and demos is the people, and the kratos bit means power. So it's people power.
People power,
Unlike aristocracy, aris is Greek for best, so aristocracy is government by the best people. And there is another lovely word which I really appreciate, kakistocracy, with K's.
Not heard of that one.
Kakis is Greek for worst, so kakistocracy is government by the worst people.
Ooh, okay. Here's a question that was texted into us. Are they election or opinion polls. That was from Susan at Ferny Grove.
Okay. An election comes from the Latin word eligere, which means to choose. So an electio is the act of choosing, and now in English election, and elector is a person who does the choosing. Interestingly, we don't have electees. We could have. It would be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a poll is slightly different. The word poll actually comes from the word for head. And if you're counting polls, there's a cattle name. I think hornless cattle or something, which are called polls. We need a farmer to tell us.
Yeah, yeah.
But the polls, it's the process of voting. So we go to the polls. All right. So an election is, you know, another way of saying the polls. But in the past, they used to count heads to see how many people were voting this way or that way.
Yep. Okay. Let's go to Pete, who joins us from Scarborough. Pete.
Oh, g'day.
G'day.
We use the word pretty instead of the word quite. So something's pretty big, pretty small, that sort of usage. Is that, how does that come about when we've also got the word pretty for something that's attractive or...
Okay.
Yeah.
This just, I don't think that anyone knows how exactly it came to mean to a moderate degree or something. But there are a whole series of words like, you know, real heart and bloody heart and so on. Dead right. Right. And it came from the word dead, but it doesn't actually mean that you are lacking life. It means that, you know, you're increasingly right. So there's a whole stack of words which have come from other places, which can modify in various ways how much credence you're going to give to something. So he's pretty intelligent, meaning to a reasonably advanced degree, but not a genius. And I'll have a look in the dictionaries and see if anyone knows how it came about. That's usually harder, unless someone like Shakespeare actually said it first.
Oh, right. Oh, thanks.
Okay.
And just a quick other one. How come that we don't have any words that just end in a V without an E after it or anything like that?
That's due to the history of English spelling, which is very, very weird. And I can give you hundreds of words in Russian and in Russian anyway, which end in V. Papst, for example, is of the papacies.
Kiev.
Kiev, yeah, right. Normally in English, the V is always followed by an E, even when the short vowel, I. So give, you know, you'd expect G-I-V, you have G-I-V-E, for historical reasons. V is not quite such a common letter in English as some of the others, which is why you get more for it in Scrabble, I think.
All right, let's go to Sonia now, who joins us from Toowoomba. G'day, Sonia. What's it like up there today?
Oh, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
nice to hear. All right, what question have you got for Rolly?
Rolly, it's about last week when you were talking about soft vowels. And the thing is, my name is Sonia, S-O-N-I-A.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in Australia says Sonia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very harsh one. So I just thought I'd just point that one out to you. I'm a JP in the community, and when I sit, I have my name on my clothes.
Yes.
And if the Indian people come to me for any reason, they say, oh, Sonia. And I think, oh, how lovely, you know how to say my name.
Mm-hmm. They're doing what's called a spelling pronunciation, where you see the way something's spelt and you give value to virtually all the vowels. And that's something we tend to do when we go interstate, say, and we don't know how to pronounce something, so we try and pronounce all the sounds we see. But Sonia, it's Russian, it's a Y, and the writing it with an I is, I think, reasonably common, but pronouncing it with an I, Sonia, as three syllables, is relatively uncommon.
Yeah.
But you have a right to tell people how you want your name to be pronounced, a bit like Colin Powell. So,
and Rolly, you won't remember me, but approximately 18 years ago, I rang you and I asked you, there was a man who had no eyes.
Oh.
Yes, I'm that lady. And you went and did your homework and told us the next week what it was.
Good Lord.
It's all to do with plurals. And
okay, everything. Well, this program's been running nearly 23 years. In fact,
yes,
just over 23 years.
Well, it's a long time ago. I lived in Proserpine then.
Oh, right, okay.
I told you there was a man who had no eyes and he went out to view the skies.
That's right.
Saw an apple tree with apples on. He left no apples off. He took no apples on, yeah.
That's right. Oh, thank you. Good to renew your acquaintance.
Thank you very much, Rolly.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in, Sonia. If you'd like to ask Professor Rolly Sussex a question, just call 1300 222 612 now. That's 1300 222 612, or you can SMS question 0467 922 612. Let's go to Charlene, who joins us from Kensington Grove.
Yes, hello.
Hello, where's Kensington Grove?
It's near Hatton Vale on the edge of the Lockyer Valley.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, what? And it's Charlie. It always gets mistaken.
Ah, sorry about that.
Hello. Now, I've got kind of two questions. One, why is the word that describes spelling a word the way it sounds not done that way, as in the word phonetic?
Mm-hmm.
It's spelled with a PH.
Right. That's because it comes from Greek. And phonos is Greek for sound, and so mm-hmm. phonetics is the study of the sounds of languages. And there are lots and lots of words from Greek with PH, like philosophy and so on. They were PH in ancient Greek, they're now F in modern English. And so given that PH, like TH, is two letters which counts as one sound, it is in fact phonetic. It's a bit not like the word monosyllabic, which is not itself monosyllabic.
Yes.
All right. There's five syllables instead of one. Okay.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, and also the same sort of thing with lisp, you know, the word to describe not being able to pronounce an S has an S in it.
All right, yes. Lisp, by the way, is also a programming language for computers.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's called List Processing Language, LISP.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's very interesting.
There you go.
Now, I've wanted to get through as well to say that I actually met you on the 2013 Cairns to Corumba, I think it was.
Oh, yes.
And I cleaned your bike chain for you. You invited my friends and I back to your camp for dinner, and then we declined at the time, and I've been kicking myself ever since I found out what wonderfully interesting and fascinating man you are.
Thank you very much. That was a good ride.
That's all right. It was, and I love listening to you.
Yeah. I'm still riding. I had a birthday about 3 or 4 days ago. I won't tell you how many, but I did about 30-something Ks on the bike before breakfast in Lycra.
Oh,
do not lag.
Yeah, I've had two babies since that, right? So I haven't been on my bike right much.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling in, Charlene. And if you want to call in, 1300 222 612 is the number. Let's go to, we've got Sandra, who joins us now from Sanford Valley. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
My question for Rolly is, did Shakespeare refer to politicians as tricksters?
I think he did.
I think he did too. I can't remember where.
Okay. I have all of Shakespeare on my laptop. I don't think I'll have time to dig it out before we finish the program, but I promise you I will find out. Shakespeare had an extraordinary way of choosing the right word for people he wanted to have a go at. I'll find that one out for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Sandra. Now, Ian joins us from Warwick. Momentarily is the word you want to ask about.
Yes. I've always thought that momentarily meant just specifically for a moment
mm-hmm.
or an instant.
Yes.
But in a lot of cases now, when I'm dealing with American people, they think momentarily is at this precise moment.
Okay. There are several things going on here with American English which are rather confusing. The plane will take off momentarily means after a short period of time has elapsed, whereas for me, momentarily means for a short time. So, you know, the light shone momentarily and then went out.
Yes.
And there's a clear distinction. There's also a problem with presently, because for Americans, presently means right now, and for me, presently means after a short period of time has elapsed.
Yes.
So momentarily and presently between us and the Americans cause a great, great difficulty. So well observed.
Oh, good. And the other... Another point, if I can make now, the word fulsome, F-U-L-S-O-M-E.
Yes.
I've always thought it meant something like a bit over the top when you're talking about praising someone.
Originally it was full, in other words, a good thing, and fulsome praise meant it was warm and genuine.
Yes.
And then it did 180 degrees and it came to mean insincere and exaggerated. So fulsome praise was where you went really to town, and so much so that it wasn't plausible anymore. It's now making a return back to its original meaning slowly, and there's at least one British dictionary that says don't use it until it works out which way it's going to be. Because you can, you know, if you say, oh, I unless I get fulsome praise, I'm not going to come. They might say, well, I can do that and insult you as well. Quite problematic.
Well, that's what I wondered, but I know sometimes now, again, using, having listened to American speeches, people are using it as to mean complete.
Yeah, it's, I think it's probably a word that, that you ought to avoid for the time being. It just simply doesn't know which way, what it means.
Oh, I see.
Well observed.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks for your call there, Ian. We've got a big board of calls, so 1-300-222-612 if you do want to ask Rolly a question. Margaret in Mackay, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Good morning, Rolly.
Morning.
Rolly, can you please help me with this? On the news, I hear this deadly car, this deadly tree, this deadly assassin, this deadly this and deadly that.
Mm-hmm.
What should it be, you know, the person that killed somebody? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the context of it is wide-ranging, but what I'm saying is, that word deadly.
Yes. Traditionally, it comes from dead and meaning with mortal force. So there was it was a deadly blow and he died, meaning he hit him so hard it was terminal. But particularly in Indigenous English in Australia, deadly is a word which is very positive. And it means, you know, fantastic, awesome, good, approve, you know, something like that. Yeah. And it's now migrating from Indigenous English into teenage English and younger people's English. And it's one of the ways in which Indigenous English is actually influencing our common language. I wouldn't use it because I'm the wrong generation.
Well, that's why I must be the wrong generation as well. Yeah. Because when I hear the ABC talking about that deadly car...
Yes.
I think, no, the car isn't deadly.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person that's driving that car.
Right. That's it.
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Margaret.
That last question was actually a separate one. There's a deadly blow, all right. You could, a person can be deadly, a blow can be deadly, whatever. It's a bit of a metaphor.
Now, on the line, we have Rod from Townsville. Hi, Rod.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Morning.
Good. I'm a great fan of the Antique Roadshow, and I always use the term like if something would fit so much at an auction. I just wondered... Why Australians, have we got it wrong, or what's the proper pronunciation?
Oh, either auction or auction. I say auction.
Yeah,
Bill?
I hear both. I say auction, but I've heard auction a lot.
Yes, this is one of the ones which is left over from previous generations. My grandma was born in 1876, and she used to say salt rather than salt. Now, I think and the Queen used to say salt and Australia, and those have both changed as well. Auction seems to be one of the ones that's still hanging around with the older pronunciation. But you'll hear auction from British commentators, and that is a British program. You'll hear auction mainly in Australia and certainly on the TV when various real estate people are talking about how they're going to sell your house. Well, we'll take it to auction, not to auction.
I just wonder where it come
or
where we're wrong.
Yep, so. No, we're right. It's just that there are different pronunciations in different places. Comes, by the way, from the Latin verb augere, meaning to increase.
All right, thanks for the call, Rod. And it's busy board from Townsville today, so hi to everyone in Townsville. Arthur's on the line from the Ville. G'day, Arthur.
G'day, how are you, Rolly?
Hi there.
I'm a little bit puzzled where the word magistrate came from. I worked in the magistrate's court, and the magistrate I ever knew referred to himself as a magistrate.
Yes.
News readers nowadays are calling them magistrates.
Ah, okay. This is an example of what we were talking about last week when, as in, say, medicine, you can reduce an unstressed vowel. So magistrate. You hear all three. And I think the it one is probably more British. He chatted to me, chatted, right? The ID pronunciation. Magistrate is certainly the standard pronunciation, and it comes from Latin magistratus, which means an administrator, from magister, which means a master.
Is this like we talked the other week about medicine and medicine?
It's related, yeah. But certainly in British English, the ed at the end of a verb is normally pronounced id, unlike ours, which is id. We do, by the way, have two odd ones in Australian English which are absolutely unexplainable, inexplicable. One is stomach and the other is paddock. Both of which we have an it vowel in, although we don't write it. It's very strange.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Arthur. Now let's go to Eddie, who joins us from the ISO. G'day, Eddie.
Morning. How are you going?
Hi there.
Fire away, Eddie.
First time caller. Just when I was growing up as a young lad, my grandfather always used to curse us kids for being naughty, and he'd always use the words hokey sailor.
Oh.
I wonder if you've ever heard that before. When he said it, he mentioned he was really in big trouble because there was a man that never swore in his life, but when he said hokey sailor, you knew you were in trouble.
Wow. Okay. Hokey is American, and it means something like, it means sentimental and bad. A hokey, someone is a hokey tearjerker or something like that, means they're going over the top. But it also can mean something which is obviously not real. So a hokey Western accent, you know, if you're putting on something and it's obviously false, okay? Comes from the word hokum, H-O-K-U-M, also American, and no one knows where that comes from. It means nonsense.
Okay.
So this for him was strong language, a bit like my dad would never talk about bottom teeth. That was far too suggestive. You had lower teeth.
Yeah, because it's always been on my mind, and I use it on my boys too, as they were growing up. And just
no one in Australia would normally use the word or know what it meant, so you've got, I think, a license to use it as you wish, Eddie.
Thanks, Eddie.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in. You did all right, first-time caller. Don't worry about that. Okay, let's go to Karen now from Wangetti. Hi, Karen, how are you?
Hi, Rolly. I don't know if you know where Wangetti is. Halfway between Cairns and Port Douglas.
Yeah, I've been up that way a number of times, and I've also ridden bikes from Cairns to Corumba. So,
okay. So, my dear departed mum, she always said I wouldn't be dead the quiz. Now, is that the old English pounds?
That's right. Yeah, we used to call it a quid as well.
Ah.
And so that you wouldn't give money for that sort of thing.
Old.
There are a few of these things which continue from the pre-decimal days. You know, it was miles too big. We don't have miles anymore. The Americans do. So we still use some of these old, penny for a pound type of thing. But
yeah,
that's a quid.
Before I go, Rolly, the whole point is Mum used to say to me, I mean, she's departed, but the whole point, she said, she always comes out with these colloquialisms like, you great hairy goat.
Yeah.
And the other one she used to say, he's so mean he wouldn't show a blind man the easy way to get to a toilet.
I've not heard that one.
That I haven't heard before. No. Thank you for making my day.
Thank you.
Good on you, Karen.
The usual blind one is at the football thing. You know, blind Freddie could have seen
you
go at the umpire.
I've heard that one plenty of times. All right, we've got a couple more callers before we have to wrap things up. Let's go to Chris, I think, who joins us from Park Ridge. G'day, Chris.
Hi, Bill. Hi, Rolly.
Morning.
How are you going?
Good.
I have a pronunciation question.
Mm-hmm.
Why do Americans not pronunciate H as in herb? We say herb, and they say herb.
Yep.
I was listening to a speaker once, and he kept an American speaker, and he kept saying herb, and I thought there was something wrong. He had something wrong, but I've since found out that all Americans say herb.
They do, yep. Okay, well, these are words that we've borrowed from French. And in French, you don't pronounce the H. And, for example, in honour, H-O-N-O-U-R, we don't pronounce the H either. But hermitage is a perfectly good word, which we've also borrowed from French, and we do pronounce the H. Now, herbs is in French H-E-R-B-E. It's pronounced herbe in French, no H, and it means grass. And so the Americans have simply kept to the French pronunciation, and we've anglicized it and put in a pronounced H for it. You will, by the way, find there are quite a few things like oregano rather than oregano and basil instead of basil, not to mention cilantro for coriander and a few other things.
Yes.
The Americans do their own thing when it comes to herbs or herbs.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you for explaining that to me, Rob.
Okay, fine.
All right, thanks, Chris. Craig joins us now, and you're out at Mergen, Craig. How's things out there?
Yeah, good, good. How are you, Rolly?
Hi there.
My question, I drive a lot, and when I get bored, I play a number plate game where I'll try and come up with a word using the letters on the number plate. However, I notice there's an awful lot of J's, Q's, V's and X's and sort of the letters that aren't very common in mm-hmm. our words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do you know, I'm starting to suspect that maybe the Transport Department is using those for the normal number plates so that they can make more words out of, have more offerings for personalised number plates, or is that?
I'm not aware of this, and if you're doing the analysis from a Scrabble point of view, these are the letters that are hardest to fit into Scrabble words, and what you need is ordinary vowels and common consonants like S.
Yes.
Now, we've been through the S's and so on. We've got to the Y's at the moment, which actually makes us like the ACT, because they have number plates or had number plates with Y.
Yes.
Then we'll get Z, and I'm not quite sure what they're going to do after that.
No.
In South Australia, they've started prefixing number plates with S's. As a means of indicating, you know, this is a new series.
Yep.
But best of luck. The only thing I can suggest to you is to learn a language like Czech, because strč, prst, skr, skrk means to push the finger through the throat in Czech, and it's got no vowel in sight apart from the letter R.
Right. I feel there's a vicious plot going on to stop us from playing this properly.
Very vicious, yeah. By the way, they're now license plates almost universally, not number plates.
Okay.
This is an Americanism which has pushed the other one out of when they were number plates until about 20 years ago. But they're now license plates on your car.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yay.
Good on you, Craig. All right, our last caller for today. And that honour goes to you, Suzanne from Gympie.
Thank you. Good morning, Rolly.
Morning.
Got two comments this morning. This first one is probably an Americanism which has crept in. I've noticed it on the news, particularly. I haven't heard people using it in common speech in Australia, but there's a news broadcast and somebody's shot and they fall to the floor, but they might be out in the street. To me, the floor has always been indoors.
Yes. Yeah, I think fall to the floor has become a kind of idiom. Now, idioms are groups of words which hang around together, and when they do that, the individual meanings of the parts often get lost. So fall to the floor meaning sort of hit the deck. Now, hit the deck is only on a ship. But you can say to someone, hit the deck, meaning immediately become horizontal on whatever floor is, whatever surface is underneath you. So I think it's becoming an idiom on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay, thank you. Just one other thing. Last week you were talking about, you were making a collection of alternative names for towns.
Yes.
And having lived in South Australia for many years, Port Augusta is often referred to as the port, because there's a few ports along there.
Oh, right.
And Port Pirie nearby is just called Pirie. By locals.
It is too. And Victor Harbour is called The Harbour, isn't it?
Or Victor.
Or Victor, yes.
Yeah, just Victor. Mm.
And this is interesting because I discovered the other day that Warrnambool is the bull and Camomile is the wheel.
Yeah.
Australians are very, very productive. The rock, yeah.
Mm.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay,
good data.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks to all of our callers for joining us this morning. One text I'll throw at you before we get your final word, Rolly. Why do Americans use liberal as an insult?
Liberal is from the Latin word liber, meaning liberus, meaning free. They've pushed liberal a little bit further than we have, and it means someone who is soft on hard issues, can't stand up and take a position when it counts. And in that way, the word liberal, if you apply it to someone in America, it means that they're kind of soft at the middle and you can't rely on them to be a redoubtable politician. So it's a local. I don't think that happens elsewhere in the English-speaking world, but certainly in the US. Watch out for it as the new presidential elections approach. You'll hear a lot of it.
Okay. Got a final word for us?
Yes. This is actually from Stalin, whose real name, by the way, was Djugashvili. He was Georgian. Stalin means Mr. Steel in Russian, and he chose that name to indicate he was a tough guy. And the quote goes like this, "It's not the people who vote that count, it's the people who count the votes."
Ah, very nice. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Professor Rolly Sussex, for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
On your radio and online.
At home or on the road.
This is ABC Radio.